This is CliffCentral.com.
Baby.
Kate says that she only has Showmax for Game of Thrones. It's the only differentiated Netflix. That's the only reason she keeps Showmax going. And good thing about the others is you can subscribe ad hoc. If you can subscribe for 1 month, you don't have to subscribe permanently. Isn't that interesting? It's the weekend with I Feel It Coming. Well, the weekend's done. Monday morning, people.
Could somebody tell me how many gigs I would potentially be going through if I started, you know, doing Netflix?
What do you mean? Like your data consumption?
Well, yeah, it's like give me a ballpark figure of what you go through in a month.
Well, it's hard to actually figure that out because everybody has different usage patterns, right?
Yeah,
well,
that's what I'm asking
Ben,
for.
Ben is the one who would know.
Are streaming or downloading, give me your figures so I get a sense.
I guess the only answer to this question is you have to be completely uncapped because if you're looking, that's going to be how much? You'll become so paranoid, you'll hate the viewing experience. Mm. So, again, it's like it's difficult to kind of quote this kind of stuff because you never want to budget yourself on data. Mm. And the thing is, the way these price plans are structured, it's not like you're going to be saving money by saying, okay, I just want to have that much data in 1 month. Mm. It's almost counterproductive, really.
In other words, you don't want to know. Is that right, Ben?
Yeah. I mean, if I were to look at, like, shit, I should leave my TV on because I'm streaming. That would be the worst thing. Like, okay, wait, may I go 2 hours of entertainment today? What am I going to do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jeez, all right. Good question, though. I think a lot of people are worried about that. All right, it's after 7 o'clock. Let's see what's going on in the news. Mubs, what are the big stories around South Africa today?
Well, let's start with the big international stories first, Gareth. We'll bring it back home in just a second. So, you know, while Ben was playing golf and you were entertaining friends at your house for dinner, Sia, God knows what you were doing.
I was moisturizing, that's all.
And he was worried about his appendix bursting.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I swear.
Yes.
Please don't make fun of
us. No, you deserve to be made fun of. Sia thinks, because he has a small pain in his side, that he's having... If you had an appendix burst, you would know all about it, Sia.
But it happens in stages, so I've heard. Oh, like, it starts off as a mild discomfort, similar to what I have going on right now.
Please.
And then, over time, you're just like in stage 7 of pain. So watch.
Oh, so you want to be... right.
I didn't say that, but I'm just saying. Like, this is... I don't know. Something just seems off, but
Sia,
okay.
Sia said to me just now, I want to be saying, I told you so.
Yeah.
Like, you really want a burst appendix?
No, but I want to be able to say, ha, I told you so, guys, for laughing at me in my time of misery.
Trust me, you would know. If you had a burst appendix, you would be out of here. You'd be in hospital.
What do you have to do? You just, like, get it removed, right? It's just surgery.
Just get it removed. Yeah, it's so easy. It's horrible, Sia. Don't talk like that. You're going to manifest it. You'll make it happen. Psychosomatically, you'll create the problem. Telling you.
I'm just like...
Don't do it, dude. Don't go there. Stop it.
My body can touch me after this.
You're being such a hypochondriac.
No.
Yes, you are. Stop it.
I'm not even bruised or anything. Right. Okay, don't want
to
go crazy.
Let's go back to news. So while we were all busy doing this stuff,
hundreds of white nationalists converged for a little march that had been organized by one Jason Kessler in America.
America.
It's called the Unite the Right March, and it was called to protest against the removal of a statue of a general who had fought for the pro-slavery Confederacy during the U.S. Civil World War.
General Robert E. Lee.
All right. Okay. So, members who participated in this march included neo-Nazis and members of the Ku Klux Klan. So then very quickly, counter-protesters thought, hang on, what exactly is going on here? Mm. So they decided that they were then going to clash with these members, and so violence ensued. A 32-year-old woman, Heather D. Heyer, was later killed when a car was driven into a crowd of dispersing counter-protesters.
What?
19 people were injured in the car ramming incident, and another 15 people were wounded in separate clashes related to the far-right march on Saturday afternoon.
This is insane.
Oh, this is just the beginning of it.
I saw some stuff on Twitter about this, and I thought, oh, no, I don't want to get involved. You know how sometimes you just see a news story, and you're like, oh, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, it's chaos. So what else happened?
So then Donald Trump responded because, you know, he's the president, and he is expected to. Hours after the violence had erupted, President Trump said that he condemned, in the strongest possible terms, this egregious display of hatred, bigotry and violence on many sides. He was speaking in New Jersey to reporters, and he said, "The hate and the division must stop right now. We have to come together as Americans with love for our nation." But that wasn't enough for a lot of people who said, "Yeah, but Trump, your comments do not explicitly condemn the white extremist groups involved in the rally. This is something that he omitted and that was strongly criticized by both Republicans and Democrats." Mm. The likes of Senators Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, and Colorado Senator Cory Gardner tweeted, "Mr. President, we must call evil by its name. These were white supremacists, and this was domestic terrorism." Again, that word terrorism got a lot of people upset.
Yeah.
Because you know how globally terrorism is viewed, typically as being perpetrated by one particular group.
Well, it's always Islamic terrorism.
Well,
that's what they see as terrorism.
Yeah.
They don't talk about like the Unabomber being... Well, I suppose it depends on who you talk to. Because the people I'm listening to, the political commentators and the analysts who are looking at these situations, they call them terrorists when they're terrorists. What I fail to understand... All right, so these Nazis...
Nazis and KKK members.
All right. So as awful as these people are, they should be allowed to march, just like Black Lives Matter should be allowed to march. They're awful, hateful people, but they should be allowed to march, right?
Sure. I mean, that's why they got together. That's why they organized this march.
So did it get out of control when they were marching or when the other people countermarched?
Well, the countermarch led to the violence that erupted, Gareth. And then Jason Kessler, he was actually booed and chased away from his own press conference after he blamed the police for not preventing the violence. But I mean, you know, you what do you expect to happen though when groups clash?
And when do you, and where rather as well, do you draw the line with intimidation? Because I saw these guys with fire torches and an ant.
Oh, yes, yes. There were a lot of pictures circulating around social media about how these people were armed with weapons as well.
Mm. So it's all good and well. Go ahead and protest. Fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Firstly, I didn't even know that the KKK was still active. I mean,
I didn't know there was still a thing.
Like, are y'all having monthly meetings?
Let me ask you this. Who wants to be known as a member of the KKK in 2017?
Well, probably nobody, seeing as the guy who led this march is really upset that his face is on all these images.
Yes.
It's like, damn you guys, this has gone viral. There's me with my pitchfork and everything.
I saw, that's when I first got exposed to all of this, when everyone was like, this is the dude who started this. He doesn't want his face known.
Yeah.
Don't retweet this. Meanwhile, it has like 16,000 retweets.
Roman says, this was the largest white supremacist gathering in decades. Do you know how many people there were?
Mm-mm. 173.
Yeah, about 100.
100 this was
people.
The largest?
The biggest white supremacist gathering they could put together in decades, and it was about 170 people, according to Ben. Now, that's embarrassing.
I mean, guys, they had such vanilla candles. It's like they went out there to fight mosquitoes. I mean, this was a feeble-looking thing.
But guys, in that case, it's already embarrassing, right?
Mm. And then just... On top of that, I saw some tweets as well from people saying, yo, if you are in college and you are protesting on a Friday night, you are totally not making the most of your college years. Like, just go back to college.
Can I have a drink?
Yeah, have a drink. Chillax.
Wow, that's embarrassing. 170-odd people. That's all they could muster up for white supremacy. Clearly, it's not a thing. I mean, I can get more people to a crowd, what do they call it?
mob. What do they call it? Flash mob.
Flash mob.
I can get more even people to a dancing flash mob than we could get to that white supremacist gathering.
Opening of an envelope, like.
Yes. That's insanely embarrassing. You see, when people do that, you don't need to countermarch that because you're giving it legitimacy. This is only a news story because there was a countermarch and then it got into craziness. But if 173 people marched through Johannesburg, we wouldn't bat an eyelid. 173.
Well, exactly. We'd just say, well, the youth league's going through tough times, so we'll let them go.
Right.
No, our marches usually boast numbers in their thousands.
Yeah, I mean, 170 people? Go home. Those people, you don't even, you're like, oh, I'll have to use this street. Because 100 people, in fact, you won't even have to use another street. You just wait for the 173 to go past. It'll take all of 5 seconds. And you got the street back. That's not a march. That's like a coffee shop on a Thursday. I mean, first of all, it's bad enough if you're a neo-Nazi or a Ku Klux Klan member and you think that that's still a legitimate place to be, if you think that that's an important role to have in society. That's bad enough. But when you can only muster up a total of 170 people, this is not something worth taking anyone's attention. Genuinely, this is embarrassing.
Even if you stole your mother's tiki torches to protest.
Yeah, I mean, white supremacy is clearly, it's not an important movement for anybody. If only 173 people could join.
Couldn't you guys have sent out a newsletter maybe if this was so important to you? Maybe. Just save yourself the drama.
You guys you speak of, Sia.
No, he's talking
to
them.
Whoa. Why are you
looking at us and saying new people?
He's talking to them.
Do it, Sia. Do it.
I don't understand. Like, anything, anything supremacy. I don't get that at all. Why would anyone want to, what else is in the news?
Oh, this is the problem with being a celebrity, having employed people, and then when those people are no longer under your employment, they decide to dish all your dirty secrets.
Uh-oh, who?
This is exactly what is happening in the case of Mel B. Do we all still remember Mel B?
Scary. Isn't she scary? Scary Spice?
She's not so scary these days, yeah.
Yep, Scary Spice.
She's still on America's Got Talent, right?
Yes.
Is she?
Yes.
Okay.
She's one of the judges.
All right, so... it all began when the 42-year-old pop star accused one of the people that she employed in her home of having had an affair with her now ex-husband, who is a producer. And not only did she say that this woman had an affair with the husband, or rather ex-husband.
Isn't she the nanny?
Yes.
Yeah,
she also fell pregnant and had the baby aborted. So that's how this all starts.
Okay, but hang on. Let's just clear this up. I need to be... 100%, because you know I'm big on Spice Girls trivia. So Mel B,
that is so convincing,
has a husband who's also a producer,
mm-hmm.
Yebo,
who slept with a nanny.
According to Mel B, this woman slept with her husband because remember her and the husband had a falling out and then they got divorced.
And there was abuse allegations.
And I think like she has to pay him maintenance or something like that.
She's richer
because,
than him.
Yeah, because she's richer than him. So, you know, as part of the allegations that Mel B made, she said, you know, this woman had an affair with my husband and also aborted the baby that, you know, she fell pregnant by. Then, Lorraine Giles, that's her name, the nanny. In response, she has filed a 128-page libel lawsuit against the star in which she claims that no. First of all, I didn't have sex with your husband until you instructed me to do so. Second of all, do you want to forget about the 7 years that you and I spent having sex together?
This is why you this need a consequence.
And then there were also the threesomes. In documents filed in California Superior Court last week, the 26-year-old claimed that she had sex multiple times a week with Mel B over a 7-year period and only slept with Stephen, the ex-husband, on the singer's instruction.
Wow.
She said, my sexual and employment relationship with Melanie continued for approximately 7 years until September 2016.
How exciting is this?
During my time with Melanie, she and I had sex sporadically, sometimes having sex multiple times in a week. On the other hand, I never had any sexual relations with Stephen without Melanie's instruction and without Melanie's actual apparent consent.
Mm.
At no point did I represent to Melanie that I was pregnant with Stephen's child. So she's also denying those allegations that she fell pregnant and had the child aborted.
What a story.
Ooh.
Mel B must be the most exciting woman in Hollywood at the moment.
What is going on?
What an exciting story. So she was banging the other babysitter in a lesbian tryst. And then she would instruct her to sleep with her husband.
That's according to her.
And they would all
her.
Join in. It was, sounds like a party at Mel B's house.
Who were we talking about a few weeks ago who... it was P. Diddy.
Mm-hmm.
It was P. Diddy, and one of the people that he had had employed came out to the media.
Chef. Yes.
The chef, and said that, you know, she would have to walk in while Diddy was having sex with people and feed them.
Yes.
But can you imagine how these interviews go? So, you know, you're working for celebrities, that means you probably have sex with one of us.
What is happening?
I'll tell you how the interviews go. They go, so I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. So tell me what you want, what you really, really want. That's the interview. There's an actual transcript of the interview. Wow, it's just unreal. What a sexy life this Mel B has. She's so horned up. She's doing the babysitter.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's letting the babysitter do the husband. Then she and the husband are doing the babysitter. And it's just a thing. There's a whole vibe going on there.
This what makes me skeptical, though. Why would you allow a story like this to go to court? Because you then know, Mel B, that we'd be talking about this. So maybe it might not be true, hey?
She can't stop it. I think she started this by throwing shade at the babysitter. She said the babysitter slept with her husband. Now the babysitter's got to defend herself. She's like, whoa, 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 whoa. I slept with her husband because you told me to.
Mm.
You see, from her side, in the midst of the messy divorce, what she did confirm, well, or rather from her perspective, is
this
that
is Mel B.
Mel B's perspective, that she was abused by her ex-husband.
All right.
And that she did confirm that he forced her to engage in threesomes. So we don't know if it was the nanny or not, but with the nanny saying this, one plus one equals threesome.
All right, so who is, I mean, clearly the husband is going after Mel B's money here. Right?
Yes. Well, I mean, he's entitled to it, according
sure.
to the law.
According to the law, he gets some of the money because she's
messy, nasty
worth more than him. Now, what about her, this nanny? Is she going to get some money? Is she going after Mel B for money as well?
I would want some.
Yeah, it's a classic thing to do in Hollywood, is to go after your wealthy employer when the opportunity presents itself.
This is a major move for women empowerment. I'll tell you why. Because this has been happening to men, and men have been the ones orchestrating orgies and threesomes and babysitters and all kinds of stuff for years. And the woman has always come off, the woman who's the wife has always come off worse, right? She's usually been the one who's had to go, oh, well, my husband's cheating on me. Yeah, and deal with it. Now, suddenly it's the man in Mel B's life who has to put up with her presumed infidelity.
Mm-hmm.
Exciting times.
Unless, like, once again, this is a prime case of why would you hire a young nanny? This girl was like 18, 19 years old.
She's hot.
From Germany.
Because she's hot and you're Mel B and you want some action.
See?
Nice.
And then backfires.
Wow, what a story. This is very exciting stuff, isn't it?
Wow.
All right. Anything else going on in the news?
Yes. The Priority Crime Unit, the Hawks.
Yes.
They want to assure all of us that they are making some progress in the Gupta leaks investigation.
Oh, good.
That's according to them.
All right.
This follows a report in Sunday newspapers, which quoted two unnamed senior prosecutors that are apparently helping with the investigation. They aren't convinced that the emails constitute evidence against those implicated in wrongdoing and don't believe that they can be admitted as evidence. That sounds a bit problematic. So the Hawks say that they are still investigating and they will hand over a final report to the NPA once they have a solid case. Well, I mean, what's the NPA going to do?
Yeah, look, I don't buy this because, first of all, the Hawks are toothless. They've got that Burning Clemeza as the boss there, and he doesn't have any...
Still?
Yeah, of course. And he doesn't have any interest in upsetting the status quo.
Secondly, if they did hand over a report, they're handing it to who? Shaun the Sheep.
Right. So what's going to happen to that?
Nothing.
Zero. Correct.
Although the unit have refuted claims that it is actively trying to find reasons not to proceed with the case for political reasons. Mm-hmm. But according to Hangwani Mulawuzi, who is the Hawks spokesperson, he said, that's just a perception that's been going on for some time. And I don't know where it comes from. Those were his actual words.
Oh God, these guys, they must think we're so dumb. They must think they could just sell us any story, right?
It's not far off, though.
I don't believe the Hawks. I don't believe the NPA. And I don't believe they're going to arrest anybody.
That is probably the most frustrating thing.
I don't think they're going to arrest... Do you think they'll arrest anybody? Hell no. If you are... Like, currently, because the president's been so clever about this, he's just put his men in different places to gatekeep. I mean, even... You could say Busisiwe Mkhwebane is there to protect him. So you can't even rely on the public protector. So you can't rely on the Hawks. You can't rely on the NPA. You can't rely on the public protector. So none of this is going to happen. Please, these people are as safe as houses. Good to have friends like that, huh? If only Mel B had friends like that, she wouldn't be in the steaming situation she's in.
Oh, no. She wouldn't now be in the news with all her stuff exposed.
Poor Mel B.
Oh, by the way, sidebar, there might be some tapes with Mel B as well.
Ooh.
Sex tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody want to see those?
Yeah, sure.
Why not, huh, Ben?
We watch porn on a regular basis. Why not watch Mel B's sex tape?
Porn,
yeah. All right. Why not?
Oh, awesome bad, times. Sexy, exciting. Exciting times.
In some, just carrying on shaking your head news as well, move over Misha Barton because we have a new little case that we can focus on, and that's Kesha.
I don't know if I'm finished with Misha Barton, but all right, let's go to Kesha.
Misha Barton's finished with herself. I think we can also move on from her.
So Kesha is, she must have some... She just looks like a mess.
Yeah.
What's happening with Kesha?
And we've always known this, but now she's sort of trying to make a comeback. She's just dropped her first album in the past 5 years. It's titled Rainbow, and there's all these singles, and they're supposedly doing well. I don't really know, nor do I care. But remember on Friday, we were talking about the two main producers in the music industry, Dr. Luke and Max Martin?
Yes, of course.
Now, Dr. Luke was the one who is still wrapped up in this whole legal case with Kesha. Because Kesha filed saying that Dr. Luke sexually and physically abused her because they've been working together since 2005. Oh, yeah. So this is still a civil lawsuit that's currently being played out in court. But here's now the sad part. Even though, like, she's trying to move past this, get this. She's released this album. It's kind of doing well. But Dr. Luke is actually still entitled to the money. He's getting some percentage.
Yeah, but she's getting her profit. She's getting what's due to her, is what I'm asking.
What do you mean?
He helped create the songs.
Her, Kesha. But is she getting what's due to her in terms of the money being made as the artist of the song?
A part of it, but this Dr. Luke guy has not worked on this most recent album. But still, because of the contract that they signed back in 2005, he's getting some percentage because any sort of contract after that, this is some twisted, I own you for the rest of your life, Clive Davis shit. So, Kesha.
Fine print.
Do you feel sorry for Kesha?
Fine print will have you trapped in situations that, you know, unfortunately might not be in your best interest, and you probably only discover that after the fact.
Mm.
And if, you know, Dr. Luca, how long has he been doing this? So, you know, he probably found a way to rope her in so that he can keep benefiting, which clearly he is. But that's the way it goes in the business. That's the way it goes. People get exploited. People don't know what they're signing. That's the way it goes.
It doesn't sound fair.
No.
It's not
fair.
Not at all. It's not. But that's life.
Tough titty.
Sure.
Right. Well, Kesha, I mean, listen. I don't know that Kesha's all that smart.
Mm-mm.
I think she's been suckered here. You think that's funny? Amanda's laughing at it.
Oh, okay.
She reckons she reckons Kesha's dumb as well. Right?
Yeah, no, she's not too smart.
Oh. Have you all listened to any of her songs?
Yeah, of course. I haven't listened to the new ones, but the old ones are like my favorite.
Tick tock on the clock. Da, 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 da. What was that song of hers?
Yeah.
Wake up TikTok, in the bro. Morning looking feeling like P. Diddy. Diddy.
I'm gonna hit this city.
Right.
Wait. Brush my teeth with a bottle of Jack, cause then I leave for the club. I ain't coming back.
That's good.
That is some lyrical genius, by the way. I'm sure there was the millennial whoop somewhere in there as well.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, with her, it was more like a...
Well, I'll tell you what, while we're talking about music, there's something that came up on Friday, and I know Mubs is not excited at all about this, but Ben just loves him some ABBA. Right, Ben? And so does so does Amanda, by the way. So this is not a generational thing. Ben's not just representing people of his age. Amanda loves ABBA. Is that true? Speak for yourself.
I do.
You do.
Amazing. Right,
so let me give you a little... We might just make this a history lesson of a kind. All right. So ABBA, of course... A Swedish pop group formed in 1972, before any of us were born.
Mm-hmm.
And they are Agneta Fältskog.
Mm.
Mm.
Right? Do you know which one is Agneta, Ben? She's the blonde
one. She's the really talented blonde one who now lives on an island because she hates people.
Correct. Bjorn Ulvaeus. Bjorn is the one who didn't have the beard in the beginning.
Bjorn actually married her.
Yes. Bjorn and Agneta got married.
Is Bjorn the one that Ben says fathered Dr. Luke?
No, that's Benny.
No.
Oh, okay.
That's Benny Andersson, and then there's Annefrid Lyngstad.
Mm. Right. So
Max Martin was the one that got fathered here, because he's Swedish, not American.
Oh, okay, okay, my bad. Did the other two also marry each other?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, give
very
it to me.
Listen.
Give it to me.
First of all, this happens. You've seen Survivor, right?
Yes.
And Survivor, you stay on the island long enough, you fall in love with someone. That's what happens. If you're around people that much of the time, and these people would tour, you even heard that song where they talk about Super Trooper, da-da-da-da-da-da. Da, 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 da. That's basically listen to the words and you'll hear how they lived and why they ended up banging each other's brains out. Listen to this quickly. You'll get the basic idea.
It's
great harmonies.
Like
listen.
I always do.
Right?
'Cause somewhere in the crowd.
So she's now they're going to talk about their concerts, they would tour together, and listen to this line, because this gives you an idea of what the four of these people were up to. They were touring every other day in some other city. So here it is. Listen to this. You get the idea.
All I do is eat and sleep and sing.
Oh.
That was it, yeah?
You feel all right? You know what a Super Trooper is? It's that huge spotlight. Alright, so this was. I only played that song because that really gives you an idea of what kind of a life they had. They were the most commercially successful pop band, probably of all time, from Sweden.
Yeah.
That, by the way, was Annefrid singing, Ben, the one you said wasn't talented.
Mm. Not as talented.
Oh, she was much better, if you ask me. But we'll get into that just now. That was the whole argument Ben and I were having the other day.
As who's more talented.
Yeah. So they were on the charts from 74 to 82. They won the Eurovision Song Contest in 74. And that was really the beginning of their career. They have sold between 140 to 500 million records.
Hmm.
Somewhere between 140 and 500 million records.
And that's just sold. I mean, what are the pirate numbers?
Oh, huge. Huge, huge, huge. They're also the best-selling band of all time from continental Europe and from outside the English-speaking world. So when they got together, they couldn't speak English.
Mm-hmm.
They all learnt English just for their songs. So for a while, they couldn't do interviews because they couldn't speak English.
Yeah.
So they would just sing. And Agneta spoke about how she would have to listen to an English-speaking person saying those words over and over again so that she could sing them right.
Wow.
But yet her harmony was still perfect, even in a language she didn't understand.
Correct. Just unbelievable.
So that when they got into Eurovision with that song Waterloo,
right,
they realized the only way they were going to win this whole thing if they sang about something the English people would understand. So they took all the different train stations and they thought, okay, which one we can make a song of. So they literally went through every single train station and was like, okay, that sounds stupid, that sounds stupid. Okay, well, Waterloo. And that's how they won.
During the band's active years, Falskog and Ulvaeus and Lyngstad and Anderson were married separately. You know, they went all in one big foursome. At the height of their popularity, both relationships were suffering strain, which ultimately resulted in the collapse of the Ulvaeus-Falskog marriage first in 79 and then the Lyngstad and Anderson marriage in 1981.
Yeah, but that was definitely going to happen.
For
yeah.
sure.
Well, there was so much strain because when they went on tour, they were either performing or they were stuck in their hotel room. It was such a big deal. They couldn't go anywhere in public.
They were such stars.
They would be completely mobbed.
But you can't spend 100% of your time with your spouse. It's never going to work.
That's the thing.
Exactly,
and
right.
then that's how they felt they were actually imprisoned by their own fame.
Yeah.
And that's why it all fell to pieces.
Hmm. So there are a lot of songs, and we don't have to go through all of them, but they were famous. I mean, they were offered, I keep telling this story because I can't believe it myself. They were offered $1 billion between the four of them to get together and do a tour. It's the highest price that anyone was ever willing to pay for a band to get back on the road, and they refused.
Why?
Because they got so much money already. And those outfits, those bell bottoms, those...
Oh, that's the 70s.
It was also tax related. So they had such ridiculous outfits because they didn't like paying so much tax. So they bred a lot through their elaborate outfits.
Yeah.
Is this real, Ben?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ben knows a lot about ABBA. He does. He knows a lot. But they've also, obviously, they've written, because Benny and Bjorn wrote all the songs, right? Well, all the hit songs anyway. And Benny and Bjorn basically, they wrote the musical Chess, which also is still going all over the world, and that made them a lot of money. Then they wrote the musical Mamma Mia,
mm-hmm.
which, well, features all their music anyway. And the two of them have made a fortune. They're way richer than the other two, but the other two aren't too bad, I must tell you. They still make huge royalties off of their music videos. And every one of their songs is pretty much, you know it, even if you don't like it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm.
What's this? Ben, which one is this?
Isn't this the one they wrote when they actually broke up?
I don't know which one that one is, Ben.
No, because there was one of the songs where it was about their breakup. It was that graphic.
It could be. You know more you know more than I do, Ben.
Yeah. Yes. This one.
What's it called?
Like, they literally hadn't... They never ran out of content.
They just have to look into their own personal
lives. Walking through an empty house.
How does it go, Amanda? Sing it for me. Go.
Knowing me and knowing you. Yes, girl. There is nothing
we can do. Wow, all right. So there's another one. Here's a famous song from them. Do you know this one, Ben? All right, that's a shitty song, but there it is. How about this one? No, Ben it's knows all of these. Song. I guarantee it.
I want to. When I do get a dog, finally, I'm going to call it Fernando, purely over the ABBA song.
Really?
Poor great dog
name.
Fernando.
They even wrote a song for Anthea.
Yeah, here's the song. Well, that was it.
This is Anthea's song. You know this one. But listen, some of their stuff was absolutely extraordinary. I mean, like, just unbelievably well written. And again, they put together harmonies and melodies and just spectacularly beautiful pieces of music. Mm. I am blown away by the piano in this one. I'm not going to bore you with all of this stuff, but listen to the piano here. This is Benny on the piano, Bjorn on the guitar. That's Bjorn. What a spectacularly talented, just from a musical point of view, guitar player, piano player. Listen to it. Chiquitita. tell me what's wrong. That's Agneta.
Oh, Chiquitita.
Yeah, right. You're enchained by your own piano. Sorrow. Damn, man. I mean, that's unbelievable. Anyway, so she lives on an island now. She's completely antisocial. She's a hermit.
What happened?
Girl,
though?
I get that though.
She's agoraphobic, and she was so sick of people coming up to her. Because out of the four of them, she probably got the most attention. She was blonde. Mm. I don't think particularly attractive, but maybe by a 70s standard.
70s standard, she was alright, yeah.
And so she would go out in public, and people would mob her, and she was afraid for her life, and look, she just eventually bought this island in Stockholm where she lives all on her own.
Yeah, she took a younger lover for a little while, but he didn't last too long.
Oh. Yeah.
In what way?
Did they ever have any progeny?
Yes.
Oh.
Nothing really came of them. But yeah, they were the third... only Elvis and the Beatles have sold more music.
Well,
they're such an unlikely...
Aren't they amazing people?
On paper.
So Benny and Bjorn still get along. They're mates. And they're still making
so much money.
Sure. But Annefrid, do you know that she went on to become a princess?
Oh, did she marry into royalty?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Sure, I mean, who doesn't want to marry someone from Apa?
She married into royalty, and she's now known as Her Serene Highness, the Princess Royce of Plauen.
Oh.
Sweet. Where's Plauen?
In Germany.
Oh, okay.
How's that, huh?
Sure.
Yeah. She married Heinrich Rotzow, Prince Royce of Plauen. And since then, she holds the titles of Princess Royce and Countess of Plauen with the style of Her Serene Highness. Mm. And he died in 1999, and she now lives in Zermatt in Switzerland, right under that mountain, sharing a home with a British partner, Henry Smith, the 5th Viscount Hambledon.
Oh,
she's really moved up in the world, old Annefrid.
Yeah.
She's not going to sing again. You want her to sing? You better hope to hell that you have enough cash in the bank. Why would Princess von Plauen come and sing for you?
I am looking at some of their publicity pictures.
Aren't they great, Sia? Aren't they great?
Goodness.
And it was in Australia where they eventually became like massive superstars. So winning Eurovision was their breakout thing, but then because they weren't very marketable, they went through the doldrums for a couple of years. And they went to Australia, and there was nothing in Australia up until like drinking in tiny shorts.
And
that's where they became stars.
I think the song that Ben was referring to earlier when he spoke about how that was their breakup song, I think it was The Winner Takes It All, actually.
Ah, yes, that's correct.
Yeah. I mean, that was really the like heart-wrenching story of the divorces.
The greatest divorce song you can ever play.
Oh, for sure.
Oh,
The Winner Takes It All.
Was that their farewell song, essentially, to their fans?
Well, it kind of just spelled out how things ended.
And it showed them kind of performing happily together in the beginning, and then at the end of the... And they were the first people to really do music videos on a big scale, too. Yeah. They were cheesy, but by that standard of the time, they were just a tour de force. So if you listen to the lyrics, you'll hear how they fell out of love with each other. And obviously, someone got hurt. Either it was the man or the woman in each relationship.
Well, it was the woman, yeah.
Listen to these words. I don't want to talk about things
we've gone through, though it's hurting me. This was her brief to the lawyer.
Now it's history. It basically was submitted to court. I played all my cards, and that's what you've done too. Nothing more to say, no more race to play. The winner takes it all, the loser standing small. I mean, there's a lot of pain in these lyrics, right? Victory, that's a destiny. I was in your arms, thinking I belonged there. I figured it made sense, building me a fence. Wow. Building me a home, thinking I'd be strong there. But I was a fool. But I was a fool, Mavs, playing by the rules.
That's what happens.
The gods will throw the dice. Their minds as cold as ice, and someone way down here loses someone dear. The winner takes it all. A lot of of pain. Holy hell, there's a lot of pain there.
Okay. Which they made into a hit song.
Shit, that's clever. That's
genius.
But now, hang on. Mm. If the blonde one was always or was doing most of the vocals, then it would...
No, they were both. Both the girls were. Don't be like that. No,
oh, sorry. I just saw the blonde one's
face. If you
watch
any of the music videos, the
blonde
one...
Throughout that entire music video.
Yeah, exactly.
It was mostly her in that
okay.
one.
Oh, so what I'm,
depending on the song...
What I'm asking is, can we settle this
yes.
this argument between
yes.
you and Ben?
Yes.
Of who was the best vocalist?
They were both... Brilliant. I mean, that's what made it such an...
Gareth, they were both brilliant, but, I mean, Agnetha was very much front and center. It's very clear. If you watch any documentary based on ABBA, which there are many,
yeah,
she was always positioned as the one who had the biggest burden performance-wise. Look at the music videos, too.
Ben.
Ben, how did you even get into ABBA?
Yeah, how did this happen?
ABBA years.
Oh, what a crap answer.
Because what else do you want here? What else do you want?
No, Ben. Like, how were you exposed to them? It must have been your parents, right?
No.
No? Who? How?
Guys, it's music. Music will always find its way into your life, right? What you do with it, it's just, all their songs were just, like I said, it's the origin of pop music. If you listen to their songs, you go, wait, this kind of sounds familiar. It's because other songs have taken elements from it.
I mean, this is amazing because actually they broke up in 1982, so you weren't even cognizant.
One.
Yeah. Like Ben didn't know them when they were a band at all, and yet they've somehow worked their way into his life.
1982?
Like their music still yeah. has a point in this world. It has a resonance of some sort. I don't know.
Here is their last ever performance in 19... And then we've got to get to Rich Mulholland. Here's their last ever performance, all right? This is. It's very badly recorded because it's really just the four of them standing around. None of them want to be there. They all want out. Agnetha is leaning on Benny because she refuses to be even near Bjorn. And Annefrid's standing awkwardly next to the piano. And it's really just they're in a TV studio and it's their last ever song.
A wonderful thing, 'cause everyone listens when I start to sing. I'm so grateful and proud. All I want is to sing it out loud. So I say thank you for the music, the song.
Who knew someone would offer them $1 billion later on to just do this one more time? Please, one more time, and they'd say no. And after that, they couldn't wait to get out of the studio.
Yeah, they
thank you for the music. Now we're done.
And never see each other again.
It's kind of like us after 9 o'clock every day.
Oh, yeah, for
thank
sure.
Thank you for the show.
Wow. How's that, huh?
Yeah.
It's interesting that they did so much in just 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because they were constantly working.
They didn't stop.
There were donkeys and farms that worked less than these guys.
I get why you'd want to live on a farm alone after that.
Yeah. Well, there we go. That's the story. So now let's get to Rich Mulholland. Way more exciting than an old pop band. And he's on the line live to us from Cape Town on Skype. Hey, Rich Mulholland. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Excellent. You sound rested and rejuvenated for a Monday.
Well, I feel that way. I had to do the school run this morning, so I got up earlier than usual.
And I just noticed there was like a deep timber to your voice. It sounds good.
Yes, hello there.
Hi. Okay, that suddenly your Skype.
So here's the thing.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
I actually started my career as a... Oh, dear.
Oh, boy. There it goes. There goes the line. Let's just give it a second. You started your career as what?
A Super Trooper operator.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I was...
Not surprised.
Yeah, I used to tour with bands as a lighting designer, and obviously the first place you start is on follow spots. So that was the start of my lighting career.
Wow, dude. Yeah, that must that song, you must hate that song.
No, I love it. It gives me nostalgia.
All right, what's bothering you or interesting you today? Yeah, go ahead.
So I want to talk a little bit about, I mean, I have another topic, but I want to discuss a bit about, you guys were chatting about ABBA and things. Mm-hmm. But have you ever stopped to think about how, I mean, Sweden has a population of 9.9 million people.
Yes.
Yet they have far, far, far more number one hits than they deserve.
Yes.
There are so many. And I'm curious to know, because I actually went on a punk rock tour once in Sweden, and I found out why that was. But I mean, I don't know if you're aware, bands like Europe, Final Countdown, The Hives, in punk rock, it's Millencolin and metal. There's like In Flames. There's Ace of Base, yes. Cotton Eye Joe, Roxette. Sure. All of these Swedish bands. And are you aware why that is?
No, tell me.
So I actually think it's a case study generally in how education can be done better. So I went over there and I was staying with the owner of a record company called Bad Taste Records. And I said to the guy, like, how come you guys hit above your weight so much? You know, again, I'd been on tour with Roxette previously and, of course, ABBA. And he said, well, it's very, very simple. He said, at school, we all have to study music. So it's compulsory that you study music at school. However, the school doesn't decide what music you study. You can choose any genre of music you want. And whatever genre you choose, that's what you'll be graded on. So if you want to choose death metal, then you will go through death metal, and that's what you will practice at school. And your music teacher will gauge you on how well you play death metal, not on how well you play the music, you know, to any musical.
And you have to do this the whole way through school, so primary school and secondary school?
I'm not 100% sure, but it was the guys just said to me that it was compulsory, so I can't remember the detail offhand.
That's terrific.
But what I loved. Yeah, was the idea that they understand that people don't – everybody loves music. But when we say that, we don't mean the term generically. We mean we like music that we like.
Yeah.
So their belief was, well, if we want kids to grow up liking music, let's teach them how to play the kind of music they love already. And I think that's a fundamental shift in education. And if you consider how well that's done with regards to how well they performed on the world charts with regards to music, I mean, they hit way above their weight class.
I like that. I think that's an interesting way of looking at education. And I think if we had to inject some of that into our curriculum, because we teach kids the stuff that we think will help them in a career, but actually what you should be learning is about learning. And if you can learn to play an instrument, then that it makes your mind more useful. It makes you a more interesting human being, and that'll enable you to interact with more people, and then those people will provide you with opportunities potentially in your life. It's phenomenal. It's very easy. It's very simple. Very straightforward. Why don't we do it?
Exactly. I mean, I guess also that any of the creative arts, it does teach you a way of thinking differently around different things as well, which is powerful.
Yeah. All right, so it's the reality check. What's on your mind this morning?
Okay, so we've all heard at some stage a variation on the following statement. It says that 55% of the overall message is how a person looks when delivering a message, their body language. Mm-hmm. 38% is how a person sounds, their voice. And 7% is what they actually say, the words that they use.
Right.
Right? Now, I saw another presentation professional present this recently. And I was so frustrated by it that I ended up actually putting it in my recent newsletter, and I wanted to talk about it here right now. Uh-huh. If this was true, okay, if you stop and think about this for a second, and we refer to this as the Moravian myth, if you stop and think about this for a second, it means that you would be able to watch foreign films without subtitles, right? Yeah. It would be no problem. And you guys on the radio, you'd be properly screwed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it would confuse the bejesus out of us. Mm-hmm. And so I want you to imagine for a second that I was standing and I was maybe telling you a story, and I was slumped over, and my voice was, you know, low and not really into it. And I explained to you, though, that you'd won $1 million. If that was the case, what you would remember later is that you'd won the $1 million. If equally I was happy and merry and I told you that I'd crashed your car, you would remember that fact. And it's this idea that we stop and we believe on face value such a fallacy that amazes me.
So are you saying it's not true? It's not true.
It's absolutely not true. It's a complete myth. It's called the Moravian Myth. So it's the idea. So this guy, what's his name? Albert Moravian, in 1968, was actually released in a book in 71 that he wrote. Mm-hmm. I think it's called Silent Messages. He basically put out, and all he was basically saying was he did a very small test at Stanford, like 20, 30 people. And he was basically saying, in an emotional conversation, if somebody says one thing, but their body language dictates something else, then we can often ascertain something different from the body language. So, for example, if let's say Jazz and I had a bit of an argument, and then we finished the argument, and I turned around to her and said to her, so, is action still on the table later? If she turned around and said to me, oh, yeah, totally, 100%, totally, totally, then I would, the words would say, yes, I'm getting laid. But her tone of voice and the look she gave me would tell me, don't be a dumbass. Of course you're not. Uh-huh. Right? And that was the only thing that he was referring to. So what happened is communication specialists start preaching this as if this was some kind of reason why the most important thing you could do when delivering a message is get your body language correct. And it's just not true. In fact, Moravian spent the second part of his life trying to explain to people, guys, just stop quoting on me on this. Huh. This is absolutely ridiculous. He was simply saying that voice and body language must be consistent with each other. And if the receiver of information sensed an inconsistency, they would always rely on other detail outside of the words to get the overall message. That was all he was saying.
Because, Rich, people have been telling me this, and I just took it as gospel, that you know your body language accounts for so much more, and then your tone of voice, and then only at the last little bit it's all about what you're actually saying. And I actually started to believe this. I started thinking, well, that's why some presentations are better than others, but I could never really figure out how.
Yeah, I mean, so again, it's simply one of these things that has been said so often, so incorrectly. And again, the guy who originated it kept on trying to get the world to stop using it out of context. Mm. And it has been said so much that people have started accepting it. And why I bring this up today is, one, I think people should know about it. I think we need to debunk this from a public speaking point of view and understand that what you say is actually important. The words you choose and how, you know, when you're delivering a message to people, turns out they are the most important thing you can say, because it's what creates all your meaning. But the body language you use will help give gravity to certain things. So it's not to say it's completely unimportant, but it's not the most memorable element. You know, people will walk away and, you know, they all say things like, oh, they won't remember what you said, but they'll remember how you make them feel. To some degree. But if that's all you've done, you're a shit speaker. If I get off the stage and all you remember is, oh, that guy was funny, I've done a terrible job. I just need you to remember one thing of detail, because the job of any time you're delivering any kind of presentation is to activate your audience, is to make your audience do something differently, not feel in a different way. And the reason this is so important is a feeling is fleeting. It lasts for a few minutes and then it disappears. This is why motivational speakers are such a bad idea. Because it's like taking a spoonful of sugar. You feel great for a second, and then you get out, you know, the next day life bitch slaps you upside the head, and then you're back to normal.
Yeah, good now, point.
The reason I bring this up for me, other than, again, the obvious, is I think we need to ask ourselves critical questions every time somebody spouts out something like this. And I think if we did this a little bit more, we probably wouldn't be having the ridiculous debates we have around flat earth or should children be given a vaccine. Somebody spots out a small number of facts, and because people don't look into it, they start believing those facts. They don't question the validity and logic of them, and then they just, you know, leave it, take it as face value. And to quote the words I have on my arm, you know, reclaim yourself, question everything. I've got that tattooed on me. Mm-hmm. You actually have to question everything that you are told today. And only once you feel that you've questioned it and you're comfortable with what you've found to be true, should you be going forward and continuing that line of thought and to spread that meme?
I love that. I think that's very helpful, because I've been misled by this stuff, just like so many other people probably have, that it's not about what you say, it's about how you make people feel. And of course, that's an important component in it, because if you make them feel a certain way, they're likelier to absorb information. But that is not the be all and the end all. And actually,
right, exactly.
The content, you're saying the content itself matters.
I mean, of course the content matters. If I'm trying to explain to you something deep and meaningful about a way that you can fix your business, and I'm doing a presentation on it, on, you know, three steps you can take to get to a billion listeners worldwide or whatever the case may be. If you leave feeling warm and fuzzy, but you can't remember what I said, that's not a great presentation.
Yeah.
But if you leave feeling emotionally nothing, but intellectually you realize, wow, these three steps, that makes perfect sense. And you do something about it. That to me is far more powerful. The problem is that we've almost accepted that most people are bad at this. So instead of having people leave bored and emotionally like tired and drawn out from your presentation, we think, well, if we can make them feel, you know, happy and then it was a great, you know, or feel good about themselves, it's a great presentation. But it's really not. When you stand up in front of a group of people, you know, if you're spending 1 hour delivering a message to 100 people, you're spending an hour of time. They're paying 100 hours of attention. Act accordingly. Mm. Right? If you do not change those people when they walk out that room, you failed. If you don't give them something to do differently. And again, I guess there are some times where, you know, you might be standing, for example, somebody might ask you just to come and tell your story.
Mm.
And again, you could do that, but the opportunity wasted for me is, the opportunity wasted for me is a chance for you to finish that story and for people to walk away and to be able to help create a better story for themselves.
Beautiful. All right, Rich, it's always worthwhile chatting to you on a Monday. Thank you very much. There's our reality check for today, and have a good day in Cape Town today.
Thanks so much, guys. You too.
Cool. Bye. There we go. Rich Mulholland, everybody, with a little look at how you can live your life a bit better. Makes a lot of sense. Those people who say to you that body language is all of it, bullshit. You just heard it. Even the guy who said that first tried to spend most of his life trying to dismantle what had become a bullshit story that got out of control. So there it is. Don't let anyone tell you that stuff again. All right, let's get into the unnews, and then we'll meet our guest for the morning, Glenn Biederman Pam. I know he's been on with the guys on the comedy show, but I think it's time we meet him. He's coming up next. Jacob Zuma's had a busy week, but he's having an even busier one this week. He has to find out which ANC MPs voted against him. He's inviting all the suspect MPs to the state building, which is in Saxonwold, of course. He will then be putting them on a scale with a duck. If they are heavier than the duck, then he knows they voted against him and will have to suffer the consequences. It's a foolproof plan. Queen Elizabeth is strongly considering stepping down as queen and letting Charles assume the throne. Some say that she feels the timing is right to do so. Others believe it has something to do with Prince Philip recently becoming friends with Mel B, and that the three are now spending a lot more time together in private. And finally, the much-anticipated new global T20 league in South Africa just lost a team. The one originally set to play out of Stellenbosch via Paarl no longer has a financial backer. Cricket South Africa desperately looking to find a replacement with ANN7, reporting that a generous local philanthropist may answer the call. The Saxonwold Sultans is a team name that's being suggested, with a special cricket ground to be built at Zoo Lake with municipal money that has suddenly become available. Isn't that great news? All right, next up, Glenn Biederman Pam. You see, we've moved the unnews. Do you see that? One of the little changes that we're massaging in from now on. Pay attention, all right? Glenn Biederman Pam next. Don't go anywhere. CliffCentral.com. On a Monday morning. Let's go. Let's get going.
This is CliffCentral.com.